Good evening and welcome to Live from the Get-In. I'm your host, Robert Crichton, and I'm worried about you. In fact, throughout this imaginatively titled first show, I'm worried about everything, the state we're all in, and ladies and gentlemen at home, I can assure you that some people here are in one hell of a state. But before we begin the show this evening, I and the rest of the company want to make it clear, no matter what living hell the outside world holds, this show, Live from the Get-In, is a safe space. We want to ensure that no one in the audience or listening at home have any questions or worries about what you will hear next. So, over to my colleague to deliver the trigger warning.
Thank you, Robert. Hello. There will be some instances of mockery, judgment, and absurdity in the following show. Those wedded to the neoliberal consensus may feel threatened by parody moving in from the West, and there may be some showers of entirely gratuitous swearing later on this evening.
But the swearing is artistically valid and impossible to cut, so tough.
And finally, no fictional aliens were harmed in the making of this program.
Thank you, Heidi. Now, we also want to make it clear that freedom of speech is the most important of modern freedoms, and we won't allow anything to stand in its way. So, ladies and gentlemen...
Sorry, I'm going to have to stop you there.
What?
I'm going to have to stop you right there.
Why?
Might need to tone down the language a little bit.
Why?
Well, this is supposed to be a safe space, and what you were saying was quite inflammatory.
Was it?
Yes.
Why?
Well, there's the problem right there. You see, the question why is very unsettling to people.
Really?
Yes, frankly, I find why very offensive.
Oh. Sorry. Why?
Well, beyond the use of it in that microaggressive way, it suggests that there may not be clear answers to questions, and that why is too open-ended. It makes people uncomfortable. And this is supposed to be comedy? It should make people feel comfortable, like drugs.
Right. So no questions?
Exactly.
Anything else?
That's a question?
Well, yeah, but we haven't started yet. So what do you think we need to do?
Could you use fewer words?
Fewer words.
People find the number of words you're using offensive, both the number and the length.
Fewer and shorter words. Any examples?
Well, there's a sketch on page 12 where the word ampersand is used quite gratuitously.
Ampersand?
Yes, I mean, do you really need to use such a long word? It might confuse listeners and unsettle them. And this is supposed to be a safe space. Mm-hmm. We must keep everyone safe, make sure that everyone is smiley face comfortable.
I'm sure everyone is comfortable with the word ampersand.
I saw someone looking vacant as you said it. Vacant, and then confused, and then scared. Frankly, your use of the word ampersand is barbaric. So I don't think that you should say that word. People might not know what you mean.
But then the next part of that scene wouldn't work. I mean, it's not quite a punchline,
well,
but...
Well, if you think it's justified, we won't stand in your way. We wouldn't dream of doing that. You can say whatever you like. Freedom of speech is very important to us.
Well, it's just one line. I could change the word to something else, yes.
Excellent.
I should start again. We need to start again. Good evening. Before we begin the show this evening, I and the rest of the company want to make it clear that Live from the Get-In is a safe space. We want to ensure that no one in the audience or listening at home have any questions...
No questions.
...or worries...
Don't say that.
Say what?
Worries?
Why not?
You can't ask why.
Sorry. But what's wrong with worries?
It reinforces a sense of worry.
But I say there's nothing to worry about.
But you're using the word that contains the bombshell of worry. Frowny face. This is supposed to be a safe smiley face. No one should be worrying.
All right, okay. We want to ensure that no one in the audience or listening at home have any questions and can be relaxed about what you will hear next. That said, we also want to make it clear that freedom of speech is the most important of modern freedoms.
Which it is.
So, ladies and gentlemen...
Whoa there! Ladies and gentlemen?
What's wrong with that?
Beyond the exclusionary nature of the class structure, it denies the possibility of anything other than a binary gender experience and allows no room for transgender or asexual positioning on a rainbow scale of possible gender balance. Reminding people of sexual and class barriers in society can trigger unhappy, unsafe, sad face, crying face, sad face thinking. We're here to protect the emotions of our audience, not to harm their sense of self, their self-esteem, their most precious emojis. Look, they're all hersey out there. You can't make them all sad face. How could you do that?
But why don't we just bleep out anything that people might find offensive?
We would, but those bleeps are very aggressive. A lot of people find the bleeping distressing.
I'm finding this bleeping distressing.
That was a microaggression, and I'm all fearful, crying, sad face now.
Well, look, we've got everyone here. Why don't we let the audience decide?
No! Stop sign, frowny face! You can't do that. You can't release this conversation. No one should listen to your argument. Hear no evil, monkey.
Why not?
You can't ask why, sad kitten face.
But why not?
It's prejudicial. You can't let the audience listen to your side of the argument because that might prejudice them against my side. You have to be quiet to protect my freedom of speech. Horizontal traffic light.
But that's insane.
How dare you make light of mental instability? Loudly crying sad face? That's not age appropriate. Stop sign koala.
What do you want me to do?
Could you just smile? No, don't speak. Just smile. Thumbs up, smiley face. It's a very powerful image.
This is radio.
So?
Images don't work very well on radio.
Exactly. Then no one will be offended. Smiley face baboon.
But no one is going to be offended by any of this.
They might.
No, they won't.
You can't say that.
What?
You can't contradict me publicly. It's hate speech. Nazi salute giraffe.
No, it isn't.
How dare you? You'll have to apologise for saying something like that. You'll have to apologise to anyone who's been offended. But most importantly, you must apologise to anyone who hasn't.
Been offended.
It's vitally important that you apologise in advance to anyone who hasn't been offended by something you didn't say.
So I can say anything I like so long as I apologise for it straight away.
Bullseye, wink.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry I said ampersand earlier.
You can't say that! Blank square because your system can't read the Unicode.
But I was apologising.
It doesn't matter what the context is, you just can't say the forbidden word ever. That word must no longer exist. You can't use it. That would make you a monster. Skyscraper big monkey.
All right!
Please stop screaming, that's upsetting me. Frowny-faced kitten up a tree.
Sorry. Unsure poop. Kitten.
Apology accepted. Stuffed flatbread.
But, look, it's all fine, really. Everyone here knows we're joking. We'll be fine with it.
But it might not be. Take the final sketch before the epilogue.
Oh, what's wrong with it?
This, look, here. That's just not on.
I really can't see the problem.
There.
It's... If it walks like a duck...
You can't say duck.
I can't say duck?
No.
Why?
Duck sounds like fuck.
And I can't say fuck?
No, you can't say fuck.
Ah. I can't say fuck.
No, you can't say fuck.
Right.
Or duck.
Duck.
You can't say duck or fuck, because if you say duck, then people think of fuck.
Right. So I can't say fuck?
No, fuck is a bad word. You should never say fuck.
Never say fuck.
Never say fuck.
Ever.
Ever.
Ever. Right. Or duck.
No, you can't say duck or fuck.
I can't say duck or fuck.
No, you can't say fuck or duck or duck or fuck.
So I can't say fuck a duck?
No, that's even worse. Fuck a duck must never be said. Never ever say fuck a duck.
I won't. I promise I will never ever say fuck a duck.
Stop saying
it! I'm not saying fuck a duck.
You are, you keep saying fuck a duck.
Only to clarify that I can't say it, make it clear to the audience that this is a safe space where no one will fuck any ducks.
No one ever said that anyone was going to fuck a duck.
I know, but now they know that no one here will fuck any ducks.
Right!
So I can't say duck?
No!
What's wrong with ducks again?
There's nothing wrong with the animal, but the word, which you cannot use, is too similar to the other word, which you also cannot use. The poor, low little people might get confused by the two.
You're assuming people are stupid.
And?
Fair point.
They won't get it. They're greedy, gullible, pathetic children, and so must be protected from dangerous ideas and images, inconveniences, facts from other people, from their own selves.
So I can't say, ever.
Any word like that is a hate crime.
Saying duck is a hate
Stop
crime?
Stop saying...
All right. I won't. I've stopped.
You're thinking that horrid word now, aren't you? I can hear it in your mind.
I can't help it. You're thinking it too.
Possibly, but you mustn't say it. You might hurt people. If you say it, they will literally, like, die.
What about doing it?
What do you mean?
Well, I mean, this is radio. We can do something, but not say it.
Yes, because saying things is the worst thing that anyone can ever not do.
Right. So if I were to do this...
What's that noise?
Well, it sounds like someone fucking...
Don't say it!
Sorry, I'm putting an end to the sketch now.
You are?
Yes, I represent the rest of the cast and we're not having it.
You're not.
We think you've taken the comedy too far away from ordinary working people and we demand to return to basics.
Or what?
Or we form a breakaway sketch comedy show.
With proper jokes.
No cheap animal-based gags.
I've been doing cheap animal-based gags, man and boy, for nearly 20 years and no one's gonna stop me now.
Exactly, it's outdated and not what the public demands.
It's not what modern comedy is all about. We're a modern comedy show for real, hard-working families.
So we're seceding from the show and starting our own breakaway comedy night.
You can't secede. You don't have a mandate.
Oh, I can get a date whenever I like.
Nice.
Puns. Yeah, live puns.
You... After a response like that, you patently don't have the support of the audience. You can't break away and that's that.
Then we demand a referendum.
Ah, satire. I see where we're going now.
We demand the right to break away from the oppressive control of a foreign, bureaucratic joke factory.
Imposing quotas and controls on our jokes?
Every day we give 350 million jokes to other comedy shows, and what do we get back?
Standardized punchlines.
We'll have more control of our material if it weren't yoked to you.
Oh yeah, and where will you get your jokes from? You'll have no one to trade jokes with, you'll be shunned by other writers, or at the very least pay more per punchline.
We'll still be able to trade jokes in situations with other writers, they'll be desperate to come and find us. They'll be throwing jokes at us.
Yeah.
Right, I think that sketch has officially run out of steam. Any other referendum jokes?
I was looking at something to do with sovereignty, but it couldn't make it work.
I think we're done.
Yeah, we're fucked.
Yeah.
Seriously, I could be deported.
Yeah, so could I.
Told you we should have quit earlier in the sketch.
That last bit was so crowbarred in.
And that, you'll be glad to hear, ladies and gentlemen, is the end of the introductory sketch. And the moment you've all been waiting for. Make the announcement.
Live from the Get-In is proud to release the full minutes from the Humbleford Village Hall Committee meeting of 17th July last.
Is everyone here?
We're missing Miss Plant.
Yes. Hemorrhoids again.
Yes.
Then I think we can start.
Right. Apologies for absence beyond Miss Plant. Mrs. Barnes said she couldn't come out because of some excuse she couldn't define at such short notice. Yada, yada, yada. So let's go to the minutes of the last meeting. Any issues?
You've spelt fish wrong on page 2.
Mm-hmm. Have I? So sorry.
Any other corrections?
There should be a colon at the top of the fourth paragraph on page 3.
Oh, should there? I used a hyphen.
If you think that's good enough.
Does anyone have a burning issue with the hyphen?
No.
Okay, matters arising.
Wait!
Something else?
Yes, there's a gratuitous ampersand on page 12.
Is that in reference to anything in particular?
I'm happy for that to be changed and for no one to ever mention it again.
Agreed. Matters arising...
Did we find out what happened to the missing coat hanger?
No, I think we assumed it was gone, but not forgotten.
Should we look into a replacement?
I think I might have something at home.
You shouldn't put yourself out.
It's no bother. Right! First item of business, report by our newest member of the committee.
Mm-hmm. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Report by Miss Broom.
So young.
Thank you.
By Abby on the shed issue.
I didn't think anyone would vote for you.
Not one of the usual suspects.
Thank you.
So, I believe you've got a report for us on the new storage shed for the Village Hall lawnmower. So, Miss Broom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Miss Broom.
Mr. Chair. I'm afraid we've hit a bit of an impasse on the shed front. I'd have confirmation at the back of the shed would encroach a little over 2 feet into the land owned by our neighbours of Nedging Tye.
Nedging Tye, yeah.
I went to their parish meeting and they are insisting that the unused backfield is not only theirs, but under no circumstances can we build on it.
Have we looked into a smaller shed?
Mr. Barrows is very particular on the mower for the job.
He does know his mowers.
Very, very particular. He insists that to do the job properly, he will need a speedy cut, speedy flow, sit-on lawnmower, and that he will need the extra feet, ideally more.
Into Nedging Tye.
Over the border, yes.
You've been in touch with Nedging?
It's a solid no-go. A solid no-go from them.
Oh, they're always like this.
So irresponsible.
So unreasonable.
They're always like this in Nedging Tye. Just take the pub, the rubbish that goes over the fence into Mrs. Kettle's garden.
And they do nothing. But if anything comes their way...
Oh, there, they call the police.
Straight away. That 2 feet. My whole life I've lived here and it has never been used.
We've all played on that backfield.
And it's nowhere near the rest of their village. It's basically ours. The moment we find a use for it and it's off the cards...
Did they even quote a figure?
Crazy money. Is it worth it? Ridiculous.
So, you said you had a plan. Are you... you're thinking legal action?
No. Look, I don't know precisely how much right their parish has to the land. But this isn't about law. This is about rights. So my idea, and it's a little out there, we could... annex the village.
Annex?
Yes.
Annex Nedging Tye.
The whole of it.
Nedging Tye.
An invasion, if you will. We'd take it over.
Invade?
Yes.
Like an invasion?
Yes.
Right.
Hear me out. Mm-hmm. It would be a surprise attack. We'd have to take control of the roads leading into the village. Then cut communications. Easily done. Mr. Barrows has the equipment to take out the phone lines, and we all know there's no phone signal there.
Yeah.
The most important mission objective would be to occupy the village shop. That limits the timing of our operation to the opening hours, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m.
Sometimes they close the village shop from 1 p.m.
I've never understood that.
Well, it's volunteer run, so sometimes they just can't get anyone.
I remember when they had a post office.
Could we please focus on the proposed incursion?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Miss Broom.
Mr. Chair. So earlier is better. I'd suggest a dawn raid. 10 for 10:30?
Invading Nedging Tye, 10 for 10:30.
Should I minute that?
Should you minute that? Give it a bit. So, Abby, Miss Broom.
Mr. Chair.
Miss Broom. Would this be a violent incursion?
Well, hopefully not. I mean, that would be up to them. And if they resist, well, that's up to them.
I see. But who's doing this? I'm assuming you're volunteering to project manage.
I think I could put my hat in the ring.
But where are we going to get volunteers to invade?
Well, I'm not so good after my hip operation.
That will mean going to the rest of the village.
Really? Is that any more difficult than organising the village pantomime? And a lot less hassle. What would you rather? Marshalling a group of tweens and teens trying to get them to vaguely sing as a chorus? Or would you rather send them over the border deep into enemy territory to slack their bloodlust on the cockroaches of Nedging Tye?
You have a point. But if we use the kids, we'd have a devil of a difficulty getting the parental permission slips in.
Well, I was thinking of going round the estate and the pub first.
Good thinking. We've been saying that as a group, they are mostly scum.
Scum.
Yes. Scum.
Exactly. Where would you rather they directed their social dysfunction? Inside the village? or out.
This could solve a lot of our public disturbance issues.
They take up their pent-up frustrations against Nedging Tai. Some of them have their own cars, so we've got a made fleet of vehicles to attack him.
You're thinking a fleet of cars?
Yes, to move in fast and take the roads. Then, we use the Little Hopper community bus to carry the regular troops to take the shop.
And you're sure this is going to cost less than lawyers?
If we hired lawyers, that would cost us thousands. Even if we won, we'd only gain what we own by right. What we own by right and occupation. We'd gain nothing. But if we bought, I don't know, half a dozen AK-47s, that's the job done, and we've gained a community resource.
Would we list that as capital expenditure?
Oh, I think so, rather than project expenses.
Well, should I start knitting yet?
Hold off a little longer.
You think we should list AK-47s as assets?
Absolutely! List all weaponry as assets of the village hall for future use in the community.
Something to hire out. Discounts. Discounts for local residents.
Yes. And I think this is important. We need weapons to keep out any raiding parties from the other local village halls.
I don't know that that's something we've had a problem with so far.
No, but we have to work on the assumption that other village halls and parish councils are tooling up as we speak.
I have heard rumours down the pub that Newton Bassett has a ground-to-air missile capacity.
This may or may not be true, and I don't think the truth really matters. It's not something people bother about nowadays.
Could I say something? Because we're off the record and I don't feel comfortable not speaking my mind.
Of course. Your views are very important to us.
I know that on this committee I'm just here to make the tea, generally keeping quiet. But I'm on many other committees in the village and have worked in the heart of our community. I've grown up here, I've been here all my life, and I've watched with concern where this committee and this village hall have been going. I'm disgusted, frankly, with the young of today. The noise and the carry-on, the litter, and, well, speaking as a long-standing resident of the village, and considering that I sit on the parish council as well, I think I can say for certain that I don't have a problem with what you're suggesting. At all. Frankly, it's about time we taught our youth to stand up for themselves, to be counted, and a good invasion, a few physical jerks, a bit of action is just what they need to wake up, to buck up their ideas, and I believe in speaking my mind, frankly, Nedging Tai are asking for it.
Thank you, Vicar.
Seriously, if you'd like me to help in any way, I'm at your service. A little blessing before you send the shock troops in? Maybe even a special service on the Sunday before? I could put something in the parish magazine, if that'll help.
Well, we could, but no one would notice.
Well, I think we're going to keep it a village hall matter for the moment. Anything else?
I think I've covered everything.
Right, the proposal is that the Humbleford Village Hall annexes Nedging Tai to recover the land owed, to build a new shed for Mr. Burrow's lawnmower, and to crush our enemies over the water. Do I have a second?
Seconded.
All those in favour?
Aye.
Those against? Unanimous. Right. Mrs. Stool, you're in charge of our web presence. If you'd like to go onto the dark net and start buying guns... That would be marvellous.
Hello, you're through to the government-approved Sleep Direct service. Could I have your name and ID number, please? Thank you. Just to confirm, you'd like to be addressed as Mr. Morris? Thank you. How may I be of service today, Mr. Morris? I see. Mm-hmm. Yes, I can see that must be a terrible problem for you, Mr. Morris. Insomnia is a terrible burden. Let me ask, do you sleep at all? A couple of hours at most. Well, that is a lot for a man your age. It's very common. I'm afraid there's nothing I can do this end. Well, your sleep has been taken direct at source. I can't stop that from happening, but there are ways. Taken, yes.
It happens to everyone these days, I'm afraid, Mr. Morris. Reallocation of sleep is automatic and compulsory, and I'm not in the right department. Stolen? Stolen, Mr. Morris? Nothing so alarming, I assure you. It's not that you've had your sleep stolen, it's just been reallocated. Allow me to explain. You see, what most people don't know is that sleep is like your heartbeat. It's part of the aging process. All mammals have a reasonably set number of heartbeats, so the faster your heart beats, the shorter your life is. It's the same with sleep. The more sleep you get, the shorter is your life, and not just because you've slept it away. No, your life is shorter. You live fewer years. So people need to spread their sleep around more, and that's why you can't sleep. It's been reallocated. You don't understand? It's a modern problem. It is new. We didn't have this sleep shortage before, well, the Second World War. It's a mixture of problems, but basically people are living too long. Far too long. Far longer than they ever did before. But that means they have to have more sleep. Or rather, they must sleep less each night to compensate. Yes. Yes, that's it exactly. We're taking your sleep now to give back when you're older. In theory. In theory, yes. You should get your sleep when you're older, in theory. But it might not be your sleep. No. Let me explain. You see, the problem is, well, it wasn't expected, this problem. We didn't plan for it. Well, we've got a lot of backlog sleep-wise, and that puts a lot of stress on the system. We didn't know there'd be a baby boom post-war, and we didn't know that they'd lived so damn long. So we've got all these elderly people wandering around who've used up their sleep and yet won't die. So it was decided to start reallocating the sleep of the young to give the old people some sleep. Yes. Yes. You're helping the greyer elements of society sleep. It's allocated, I believe, on a straight swap principle. So someone somewhere did sleep very well last night. No, not you. You didn't. We are sorry for any inconvenience this has caused. No, I'm afraid you can't know who it is who has your sleep. It's against the Data Protection Act. Besides, you might try to wake him up. No, not funny, no. I can see you're quite upset. It's the lack of a sleep, I imagine. What? What happens when you're older? Well, of course, you should get the sleep back. But, well, we've got an aging population, you see, so there are more and more people who need extra sleep, and fewer people to supply the sleep. If we'd known earlier, we could have balanced people out across their own lives, but once we started borrowing other people's sleep, it trapped us in something of a debt spiral. Calm down, Mr. Morris. All's not lost. Well, yes, when you pass the age of 65, or maybe 67, depends on what the new government decides, you will be allocated the sleep of the new generation. Of course, there will be fewer of them, so you might not get your full quota back again. How much? In rough terms, you're contributing about 30% of your allocation of sleep at present. When you become eligible for sleep allowance, you might get back about, well, depending on the markets, about 45% of RDSA. RDSA is recommended daily sleep allowance. Well, I can see that you feel 45% is not a great deal, but all is not lost. There are ways. There are ways, Mr. Morris, to recover more of your sleep. For a start, it is possible that the sleep market will improve over the next few years. It would require some pretty big changes to our society, either through legislation or natural causes. Well, for example, if we culled the elderly. Well, we'd only do it once, of course, to rebalance the market. And it wouldn't be a popular course of action to take, would set a dangerous precedent. Exactly, it might happen to us one day, eh? No, not funny, really. Well, it might happen naturally. Sudden plague, flu pandemics help no end. Of course, these hit the young too and can send the markets into freefall. When news of AIDS broke in the 80s, a lot of people lost their shirts, I can tell you. Well, the whole sleep business was privatized a few years before then.
It's been run solely by the government before that, and it was such an inefficient system. People were owed sleep, given too much, it was terribly bureaucratic. Well, the core problem hasn't changed, but as a private business, we've more room for manoeuvre to help people. Like your good self, Mr. Morris, get a good night's sleep. Now, we've had to take your sleep as part of our contract we have with the government, and we administer the return later on. But if you would like to buy some more sleep, then we can help you. Oh yes, buy it. Well, as a private sleep broker, we can buy you more sleep. It's from a limited market, and it isn't cheap, but if you can't buy it out straight, we have an investment plan which is aimed at the average consumer, which yields a very competitive return for your money. If you're in front of your computer, you are. Well, then go to our homepage and... Well, that's an opening price, Mr. Morris. It is what the market makes it. Well, yes, it must be admitted, the wealthier classes do get a better deal in terms of sleep. The poorer you are, the less sleep you get. It's unfair. And in the pre-privatized days, it was a bit better, but we're more efficient now. And you don't pay tax for it. No tax on sleep. You wouldn't want that. Well, the other thing we offer is a retirement plan. That's on the sidebar to the right. You see it? The retirement plan would be realized with your sleep allowance and could bring it up to 100% RDSA. A bit pricey for you? Well, that's 100%. Scroll down and there's a figure for a 65% total. And if you wanted to catch up on the sleep you've lost over the last few months, you could always get a mortgage. Mortgage your sleep. Well, like any other mortgage, you would get all your sleep and you would pay a regular sum for it. Yeah, like buying a house, yes, and like a house, the quality of the product would vary. You see, you can't afford a mansion of sleep. A decent semi-detached bit of slumber, perhaps. But definitely not more than 3 bedrooms. Perhaps you'd be a foreign property. There is some very good sleep to be had from New Zealand, though it doesn't always travel well. No, of course you wouldn't start dreaming like a New Zealander. I'm not talking about dreaming, this is sleep. There are very different things, and not within the purview of this company. Dream trading has been ruled out as being against the Human Rights Act. But sleep, your basic unconscious state of being, is what we trade, and we can do you a good deal. You're interested in buying. A mortgage would be a wise choice for you. It's within your budget and reasonably safe. Well, you wouldn't want to foreclose. We would have to take your sleep. All of your future allocation, yes. It wouldn't be pleasant, but you could rent a basic package if that happened. There are government grants for that kind of thing. Look, you don't need to decide now. You need to go away, talk to your family, download all the literature, and think about your options. Sleep on it. Exactly, Mr. Morris. Exactly. We look forward to hearing from you again soon.
Hello and welcome to this very special edition of the Museum of Tat. I'm Geoffrey Collins, curator of the Museum of Tat. Now, normally I would introduce my co-host, Colin Jeffries, former senior lecturer in Tat at Sheffield University, but sadly, he couldn't make it tonight. Colin is currently at an archaeological dig which has uncovered an unparalleled hoard of tat never seen before in the British Isles. This hoard, known as the Amberforth Landfill Facility, has been a positive treasure trove of abandoned snow globes, holiday donkeys made of straw, and dog excrement. And I'm sure Colin is delighted he was chosen to clean the finds. But I'm honoured to be joined tonight by Professor Fidelis Graeber, Senior Fellow in TAT and Kitsch from Random American State Name Tech, who is the current chair of the TAT and Kitsch Classification Board.
Hello.
Professor Graeber.
Oh, Fidelis, please.
Fidelis. Professor Graeber and I have been on the opposite sides of the TAT debate many a time, often refusing to classify important parts of the Museum of Tat collection as genuine tat and driving us out of our original home. Yes. But since we offered her a spot on my show and lots of money, she's become much more reasonable. Isn't that right, Fidelis?
Oh, I'm very ambitious and corrupt, yes.
So, what is tat, Professor?
Well, I've spent a lot of time, effort, and money researching the answer to that question for you tonight.
Really?
No, I just looked it up on Wikipedia.
The tat of information.
I moved my fee offshore within minutes of you forwarding it.
You're an inspiration to us all.
What is tat? It's not always easy to tell.
It's often a fine judgment call.
Or just a judgmental reaffirmation of our individual prejudices.
But that isn't to say being judgmental isn't fun.
Mm. What are the chief ingredients of tat? Well, first off, it must be cheap.
Cheap.
Vulgar.
And cheap.
Tasteless.
And cheap.
Useless.
And cheap.
While what tat is to some degree subjective, if an item comes under all those categories, then you're close to the truth.
If it walks like a duck...
You can't say duck!
I'm sorry, but I think a joke from the introduction has invaded the sketch.
Sorry, could we have this joke removed, please?
I will not be made to be sad face. I have my right to be offended.
Oh, duck off!
Where were we?
If it walks like a duck, quacks like a duck, then it's a fucking duck.
Oh, yes. There is reasonable doubt as to what is tat or not, and that's why the Tat Classification Board was created.
If you want your tat affirmed as tat, you have to go to the board, and if your bribe isn't large enough...
Which it frequently isn't.
Then it won't be tat, which is sad.
Especially as it makes it so easy to bribe me.
Yeah, Fidelis takes all currencies, including Bitcoin.
But back to the history of tat.
Thank you, Fidelis. It's been with us throughout time. Even the ancient Egyptians had tat.
Did they?
Yes. They had a king of tat.
A king of tat?
Yes. King Tat.
Tut. King Tut. Tutin.
Yeah, I got it.
Yeah. But tat didn't really become a major part of our daily lives until the post-industrial age.
Where tat comes in many shapes and sizes.
Yes. Yes, it does.
And a part of your job at the Tat and Kitsch Classification Board has to keep track of the tat in the world.
Which is a surprisingly complex business, I can tell you.
And dangerous.
We lost one of our finest tat collectors in a firefight only the other day.
Syria?
No. Western Supermare.
Tragic. Collections around the world have been measuring their tat and found some alarming results.
Yes, they have. People. Not only is the amount of tat in the world increasing at an unprecedented rate, but the size of the average piece of tat is increasing as well.
We'll just let that sink in, ladies and gentlemen.
I think it's sunk in now.
No, not... not yet.
Really?
There. The average size of a new piece of tat has increased almost 30%.
Since records began.
And we're talking 78s, not long players.
Not only that, but the amount of tat in the average home has increased 12-fold since 2005.
You may not realise, but your home is full of tat.
And this is the scary thing.
You might not even have noticed.
This is known as tat blindness.
Or TB.
And it's an epidemic in this country. Have you ever been in a shop?
A charity shop, say.
And heard yourself say...
Ooh, this looks quite nice.
You probably don't know it, but...
It doesn't. You're holding a hideous piece of tat in your hands, and it's withering your soul.
Withering.
That's why you need to go to a professional.
Like us?
For support. We can take your tat from you.
We can.
Because only a professional can really dispose of your tat in a safe and responsible way.
We burn it.
Burn it.
Burn it.
Burn it.
We burn the tat.
Burn it.
Burn the tat.
But what if...
We hear you ask.
What if the tat isn't tat? What if it's, what's the term?
Not shit.
Not shit. Mm.
Well, we're here to tell you if it's tat or not.
And if it is tat, we can give you a price for it to take it off your hands.
Cash for tat.
Cash for tat.
And we have someone here tonight who has some potential tat for us to look at.
So, could we welcome our first guest to the stage?
Hello.
I see you brought us a figurine of a dog. Could you measure it, please, Fidelis?
With
the official Transformers Robots in Disguise ruler, yes. While Fidelis is doing that, is there a story behind this piece?
Yes,
but it's really long and boring.
So we'll not bother with it.
I draw the knot.
Good, good.
It's 3¼ inches by 5 inches, exactly.
Which is quite a unique size for a piece of text.
Yeah, we haven't recorded anything of that size since 1973.
Fidelis is a wizard with the stats. Mm. Now, for the audience at home, we can say that this is a naive piece of pottery, but it doesn't leap out as genuinely awful. Could I ask you, and I hope your answer will be long and self-indulgent because this show is desperately padded, how you got it?
I bought it at a car booth.
I'm just holding my reply for the length of time your anecdote should have lasted. Laughs and moves on.
Oh, how much did it cost?
A pound?
A whole pound?
Yes, I'm hoping that it's worth at least 50p.
Oh, well, naturally.
Well, let's have a closer look. No. I'm afraid you might not be in luck.
Oh.
You see, a standard tat figurine depicting a dog will, to be true tat, will feature the animal looking out from the Wellington boot, in which it is hiding in a faux cute way, or it will have a nauseating, soppy look in its eyes.
But there's a bit of a glisten in the eye.
Nowhere near enough to induce any kind of a gagging reflex, though.
And looking at the bottom, this does appear to be handmade and not industrial, and so horribly mass-produced for a pound shop.
Not even for a catalogue that also sells wind chimes and mops.
Not even that.
I'm afraid that no third world child of seven has been forced to make this item in a sweatshop either.
That's a shame.
We're sorry.
We're very, very sorry.
That's okay. But is it worth anything?
I'm afraid it is.
Oh, no!
It's worth... Well, I'm really sorry to tell you, but this is a genuine antique. It's Russian, made by Vladimir Marlowitch around 1820, and is in mint condition, and as such could be sold for... nearly 20,000 pounds.
Oh, gosh.
Keep breathing.
I really hoped, you always do, that it'll be worthless.
Well, it could be.
Really? How?
Like this.
It's pretty much worthless now.
Oh, my God. Oh, thank you. Thank you so much.
Oh, it's a pleasure.
We like to help.
Would you like a bag for the pieces?
Yes, please.
That'll be 5p.
Thank you. Brilliant. Cheers.
Thank you. Lovely. Bye. Safe journey.
Yes.
Now, we just have time for one last item for our cash for tat section.
Hello, and what have you brought for us today?
Hi, I bought you this.
Wow.
That's amazing.
Truly hideous.
Thank you.
Tell us, because we're genuinely afraid. Where did you get it from?
I've no idea. I just found it in the cupboard. I think it crawled in there one day to die.
It is truly hideous.
Thank you.
Could we have some measurements, please, Fidelis?
I'm not sure I can, Geoffrey.
There are asbestos gloves to avoid the tat infecting you.
I could pretend to make some measurements.
An excellent compromise.
I'll make some muttering noises so that it sounds like I'm doing something. Mutter, 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 mutter.
Thank you for bringing this item, unnamed audience person.
Oh, I'm...
Really quite interchangeable as an element of our program content.
Thank you.
This object really is quite indescribable.
It's 6 inches across and 4 inches high.
I may need to do some muttering now. Can we swap, Fidelis?
Oh, be my guest.
Mutter, 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 mutter.
That's what I thought too.
Now, I can see a maker's mark on the bottom here, but the plastic injection moulding is so bad, I can't quite see if it's made in Taiwan or China. How much would you say it wasn't worth, Fidelis?
Well, I'm delighted to say that on the open market, it's worth about 1p.
Wow, I am so proud.
But we can do better than that.
Really?
As this is cash for tat.
Cash for tat!
That was surprisingly enthusiastic, Fidelis. Will we hear enthusiasm again this evening?
Oh, I'm afraid you only paid me for one large-scale outburst.
Well, we'll just have to do this bit again without enthusiasm, then.
I'm afraid so.
How much would you say it wasn't worth, Fidelis?
Well, I'm delighted to say that on the open market, it's about 1p.
Wow, I'm so proud.
But we can do better than that.
Really?
As this is cash for tat.
Cash for tat. Yay.
As this is cash for tat, we can say that we can take this hideous piece of crap off your hands for £100.
Really?
Yes.
Yes, take it from me.
Is that a deal?
Yes.
That'll be £100, please.
Bargain, I brought cash.
Remember, if anyone wants rid of their tat, we'll take it for your cash.
And burn it.
Burn it.
Burn,
burn
it.
It.
Burn,
burn
it.
It.
Burn it.
And the Museum of Tat will return in the spring as an interactive roadshow. Interested village halls, get in touch now. But that's nearly it for this first show. But I want to leave you with this little story. I was in hospital the other day for one of my many ailments. And normally you go in and the doctor says, Hi, you're hanging in there, nothing we can do, please crawl away to die responsibly. But I noticed that there were two options available to me. I mean, the first was the normal door to see my consultant, and the other was a small tent, purple and covered in badly sewn on stars. I asked the receptionist, and she said that as part of the new privatised NHS, I had a choice to see the normal consultant or pay to see one of the new franchises that was sub-renting the space. I asked how much, and she said, up to the customer. So when my name was called, I thought I'd give it a go. I went into the tent, which was dark and pungent with deep, disturbing smells, and a voice asked me to sit. Across from me was a small lady, dressed in multiple layers of Hessian, with so many rings on her fingers that they were practically a gauntlet. She saw me looking at the rings.
You like, yes?
I nodded. Do they have any special significance, I asked.
Not really, she said. But there have been a spate of muggings in the area and I like to leave a mark.
She waved her clinking hand. Now tell me your troubles. I explained the nature of my various ailments, not in excessive detail, just to the point where you could see the light of hope draining from behind her eyes.
I see, she said. I must examine you now, she said.
I dutifully stood up to remove my trousers for the anal probing I'd come to expect from all medical practitioners.
No need, sir, she said. Just lean your head back.
I did so. I was quite surprised when she leaned over to me and started to lick my Adam's apple. I wasn't sure whether an anal probing was more or less of a violation. Before I could say anything, she had pulled back and said firmly that she thought as much. She could cure me. Weird sexual assault on the thorax aside, I was delighted. Then she said how much it would cost. I don't carry that amount of money, I said.
Not a problem, she said, pulling out a card machine. We take all major credit cards.
As I inserted my PIN number, I asked, what precisely is this cure? She held up a vial, which contained a dark, sickly brown liquid.
This, she said, is a restorative cure to all ills, a positive panacea for almost every problem.
What is it, I asked.
The finest, the purest, Ewok blood.
Ewok blood, I asked. Really?
Yes, she said. It's very rare.
I bet it is, I said. How do they acquire it? I mean, I'm assuming it's not good for the Ewok.
Don't worry, she said. We're not barbarians. It's not like we cut off their penises anymore.
So how is the Ewok blood collected?
Oh, it's all very scientific these days. The Ewok is scientifically chosen by scientists when they're at least 6 months old, where they are scientifically taken from their mothers and taken to a special scientific cage where the blood letting is carefully controlled by scientists working out of a very scientific warehouse in Bermondsey.
So it's very scientific then?
Oh yes, she said. Scientists scientifically make a small hole in the side of the Ewok and the blood is collected. It's not painful at all, and the Ewoks never try to kill themselves from the pain and no one hears any screams. No one wants to hear an Ewok scream. That's why the scientists wear ear mufflers.
There's no refund available for this, is there?
No, she said cheerfully. But if you don't want the Ewok blood, then I can offer you this decorative paperweight.
The paperweight was about 6 inches across and 4 inches high and showed an Ewok sitting crying in the snow, tugging at the chains holding it down. Before I went, I asked, "Why Ewok blood?" And she replied, "Would you rather it was panda?" To which I had no reply. So I took my Ewok paperweight and walked from the hospital to the bus station, eventually throwing the globe into a bin, which was unlucky, really, because it might have come in handy when the mugger jumped me, took my mobile phone and wallet, and after a vicious beating, left me for dead. As I lay bleeding on the street, having been robbed twice, I found my thoughts drifting towards that poor Ewok in chains and what might have been. Then, as I felt my life force drifting away and the darkness begin to enfold me, I heard a voice that spoke words of great comfort.
"Do not worry," it said. "The High Lord has come to save you."
Was that the voice of God? I wondered. No, it was the voice of a local aromatherapist come wizard, who was one of the many official first responders. The High Lord informed me that a paramedic was on his way but might take 20 minutes due to budget cuts. However, if I'd rather have immediate treatment, he was willing to take payment there and then.
"Just mutter your PIN number," the High Lord whispered into my ear as he searched my already rifled pockets for a credit card. And that, mercifully, ladies and gentlemen, is when I died. Thank you and good night.
You've been listening to Live from the Get-In by Robert Crichton with Gillian Horgan, Heidi Burnham-Barb and Abby Broom. Live from the Get-In was a Milk Bottle audio production performed before a live studio audience at the Key Theatre.